Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Mike Hodges' 1980 film, Flash Gordon. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Hey, Ben. How can we make fun of Jack and Jill but then let New Year's Eve be a movie? I just don't get it.
Man, that is a good question, because that trailer is something awful.
Because that's like a legitimate movie. Like, Jack and Jill is like, yeah, Sandler didn't give a shit, but New Year's Eve is like the D-Day of crappy films.
Man, I wish they could put that on the poster. Our guest today is a writer for Shakya.com, LatinaReview.com, and more, Melissa Molina. Thanks so much for joining us on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Thanks for having me on here.
Woo. Absolutely. What are your thoughts on New Year's Eve, just to kick this thing off?
I really hope that the junket's going to be held in New York City, so that way I don't have to cover it.
Oh, man, that's a roundabout way of getting to your point, but I like it. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I've got the character name game for this week, and Melissa, for you and those of you listening who have never played before, I'll give you guys a character's name, and then at the end of the episode, you have to try to guess what movie that character is from, keeping in mind there has to be a connection to a movie that came out this past weekend in wide release. So it'll all become clear a little bit later on. But the name for this week is Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt. So be thinking about that one, and we'll come back and guess a little bit later on. So, all right, well, let's move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool special events we've been to, or comic books, any sort of pop culture type of stuff we've been consuming. Tyler, we normally start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
Yeah, we do. This week... Okay, well, I was watching Jim Henson's The Storyteller. I think I mentioned this back on episode 2.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. Just finished that series up this week. There was only like 13 episodes, and it took me well over a year to finish it. Yeah. But lo and behold, the episode titled The True Bride, The Prince, played by Sean Bean.
Nice.
I was like, oh, man, that's Sean Bean. And, that was pretty awesome. There was also one about a giant that was pretty cool, too, so... If you're interested in what I'm talking about, check that out. Still on Instant Watch. Any questions there, Ben?
No. Sounds good.
Oh, okay. I thought you'd be well vested in Sean Bean's career. You could add that to your Rolodex of info.
Well, I still haven't seen Game of Thrones, and that's like apparently Sean Bean's big, whatever he's doing these days. So
his big work.
Yeah.
I saw episode 1. It was pretty badass. I need to watch. I think I'm gonna get it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
He's also Trevelyan in Goldeneye.
Of course.
I forget. This week, tuned into Batman, The Brave and the Bold, one of my favorite cartoons on Friday nights. And guess what? It's canceled.
Oh, no.
Didn't even. Apparently, this was announced at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh.
And I guess that was over the summer, July maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea that was announced. Obliviously watched this season, and then... This last episode, like, it was acting like it was a series finale, and I was like, what are they doing here? Like, is this a joke? Because it was one of those out-of-body episodes where, like, everyone's aware that they're on a TV show.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, wait a second. There's only, like, 3 minutes left. There's no way they're going to be able to, like, come out of this. And then after research, I found out it was the series finale. And they're bringing back a Batman show in, like, 2013 with a quote-unquote serious tone. So FU DC Comics and FU Christopher Nolan for destroying a pretty good cartoon.
Inadvertently, I'm sure, but
pretty directly.
Melissa, I know you're a fan of comics and stuff like that. Have you ever seen Batman the Brave and the Bold?
Yeah, I've watched a few episodes, but I grew up with Batman the Animated Series, so that one's always been my number one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like Brave and the Bold better than I did The Batman. I don't know if you guys saw that one.
Yeah.
No, I missed that
one. I watched a few episodes of that one. Yeah, remember, Ben, we watched that one, and we were like, so that's what the Joker looks like in this one?
Oh, yeah, he was
like
all
barbarian
funky
or something. Yeah, he had, yeah, was really weird. Yeah, Brave and the Bold was like a classic Silver Age way of looking at Batman. And the animated series was, I mean, that's the one I grew up with, too. And the Adam West one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt I'm going to watch the new one, because I already looked at kind of the poster for it, and it looks pretty god-awful.
Wow, really judging it from the poster, interesting.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I'm solely not watching it out of spite for them canceling Brave and the Bold. So.
Okay.
Don't expect me to talk about Batman TV for, like, 5 years.
I can understand taking a moral stance. That's totally fine.
And then finally I checked out this thing on Turner Classic Movies, TCM. They did an AFI masterclass.
Oh, interesting. I was actually going to talk about that in my media consume section. I'm glad you brought it up. So what do you think about it?
Well, let's bring it up in yours, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, sure.
Part of collaboration with Williams and Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. I saw some of that.
So, okay, well, let's go to Melissa. What have you been consuming this week?
Last night, I rewatched Blue Velvet on Blu-ray, which was gorgeous. And Blue Velvet is a, like, wonderful film. And if you haven't seen it, then you're dumb.
I haven't seen it.
Then, I'm sorry.
Apparently dumb.
Yeah, I saw Blue Velvet, and yeah, I went to AFI Fest, so I saw a few films there. And let's see, what else? I just recently got into Cougar Town.
Okay.
My boyfriend, he had like the first two seasons, and so one day I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna start watching this. That was 5 days ago, and I think I already finished the first season, and I'm almost about done with the second season, so I've been pretty much marathoning it, and I dig it.
Nice. Did you get into Cougar Town because of Community by any chance?
No, I didn't, but I know there are quite a few references seeped in Community.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is... Oh, and I saw The Devil's Double, finally. I watched it on Blue, and it's all right. I enjoy Dominic Cooper. You know, he has a nice performance. You know, he's playing two people. But, yeah... It's not as ridiculously wonderful as some other people made it out to be, because I know that it came out during the summer, like around Comic-Con, and I ended up not watching it because it was around Comic-Con. But yeah.
So what's the premise of that one? Because I vaguely remember it, but I never saw it either.
Basically, it's Saddam Hussein's son goes and gets a friend of his who looks almost exactly like him to pose as his double, and basically, like, you know, forces him into the life of, like, you know, this crazy crime filled world, and like already running down Iraq back in the late 1980s to 1990s when the whole Kuwait war is going on and everything like that. So okay, that's where it mainly takes place.
Right on. And Dominic Cooper, who played Howard Stark in Captain America earlier this summer, for those of you who are wondering who that was. But cool. All right. Well, yeah, I guess the stuff that I wanted to mention, as Tyler mentioned, the Turner Classic Movies presents AFI's masterclass, The Art of Collaboration, between Steven Spielberg and John Williams. This was a kind of just an interview with them, like sitting on the AFI campus or something, taking questions and stuff from the students there at the conservatory, and just talking about their collaborations over the years. They've been working together for 40 years, and I think they said, Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong here, that they've worked, that Spielberg has worked exclusively with John Williams in that time. Like, he has never had a composer for a feature film other than John Williams. Is that right?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we'd have to fact check that. Said. But that sounds legit.
Yeah.
I think almost 40 years. I think they started like 1974 with Jaws.
Okay. All right. Right on.
So almost 40 years, I think.
Okay. So, what did you think about it, Tyler?
Well, I mean, yeah, they sat down and they brought like some pieces of basically the theme of the talk was music and movies collaborating, obviously. and Williams brought some of his favorite music in movies, and Spielberg brought his favorite music in movies. And like, there was one, there was like a Jimmy Stewart clip, and he was like, yeah, I remember like from this particular film, he's like, he remembered the music from the film, but he didn't remember the scene. So that was kind of how, at least I think it was Spielberg's pick, how the music played a role in it. And like, he goes, oh, the scene's pretty long and drawn out, but with the music behind it, it's different. And then I think Williams brought one from On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando during like a fight scene down by the docks, and the music played behind that. And then of course they brought up the clips of like Jaws and Indiana Jones. And then they asked, you know, people asked a couple questions, but they were pretty tame. I mean, they weren't breaking any new ground with the questions, but
yeah,
I guess it was in like the student, like in a classroom of some kind. That was a really badass classroom. I wish I had like a room like that somewhere in my house.
Yeah. It was kind of cool to see just those two guys, because I think they had said that was the first time they had really gotten together and talked about their collaboration in that, you know, like in front of a camera and stuff. So it was cool to see those two guys that have become, you know, such like titans of the film industry. And it's like one of the most famous, if not the most famous, you know, director composer collaboration in film history, sitting there. Like, these guys are, you know, it's not like Hitchcock and Herman and some of the other guys that they mentioned, some of these other guys. I mean, these guys are still alive with us and making films. Like, they worked on Tintin this year. They worked on War Horse that's coming out at the end of this year. They're working on Lincoln, which also comes out next year. So, I mean, this is like an ongoing collaboration. It's just amazing that we have the body of work that they've given us already. And it's kind of cool to be able to be kind of in on the ground level, if you will, and like listening to them talking about it as it's happening, as opposed to just like these super old guys who are retired, like looking back on, you know, back in the day type of stuff. I mean, it's still going on now. So,
right.
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting. If you guys are fans of Steven Spielberg and John Williams, one or the other, or just the concept of, you know, music mashing together with film, the influence that one has on the other, definitely check that out. It's probably going to be replaying on Turner Classic Movies. So check it out there. They're talking about maybe trying to turn it into an ongoing series with different collaborators and stuff. But yeah, go ahead, Tyler. I just cut you off.
Yeah, it's called AFI Masterclass, and Ben and I are waiting for our invites, The Art of Collaboration Movie Podcasting.
There you go. So a couple other things I wanted to bring up really quickly. It's going to be like Donald Glover-centric. So Donald Glover plays Troy in the NBC show Community, which is awesome, and unfortunately didn't get picked up for mid-season, whatever. It's not on the mid-season.
Almost canceled.
Yeah, basically. That's what it boils down to. It's like on the edge, maybe. Nobody really knows exactly what's going on with it. But
Alison Brie can come on the show because she'll be unemployed.
Maybe. We'll see. We could only be so lucky. But anyway, Donald Glover has got a rap persona I've mentioned before. He goes by Childish Gambino, and he actually just put out his first quote-unquote real album with a label and everything. I think it's Glassnote Records or something like that. The same people that signed like Mumford and Sons and those people. So the album is called Camp. It came out this week. It's really, really good. So if you guys are fans of Donald Glover and Childish Gambino, definitely check that out. I'm sure if you're fans, then you already know about the album. So I'm kind of preaching to the choir there. But there's another thing that I wanted to mention with him, and that was a Comedy Central stand-up that he did last night. It was an hour long, last night being Saturday night, called Weirdo, Donald Glover's Weirdo. And that's actually pretty funny, too. So I had seen him do some of that material here at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Los Angeles, like, you know, a few months back, maybe even close to a year ago. But it was still really good and really well put together. He did a Comedy Central half-hour special a few months ago, and now this was like, you know, he graduated up to an hour. So if you guys are fans of Donald Glover, check that out, because I know that that one wasn't really heavily publicized. It was just kind of, I happened to catch a commercial for it and had no idea that it was coming on. So check that out. Again, it's Comedy Central, so they'll probably be replaying it over and over again. But those are the things that that I've been consuming. Melissa, are you a fan of Donald Glover, Community, and or Childish Gambino?
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of Donald Glover and Community. I've listened to some of his Childish Gambino. I haven't listened to the new album yet, but I heard it's like amazing.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that he did a recent stand up on Comedy Central, so I'm definitely gonna check that out.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And I think everybody else should too.
Nice. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Flash Gordon.
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
I like to play with things a while before annihilation. Pathetic Earthlings! Who can save you now?
Flash!
Remove the Earth Woman. Prepare her for our pleasure.
Flash.
Don't kill him yet, Father. I want him.
He's a miracle man.
Go, Flash, go!
Flash.
All right, so Flash Gordon came out in 1980. It was directed by Mike Hodges and stars Sam J. Jones as the titular character, Flash Gordon. This
Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, Tyler and I were talking a little bit before the recording of this, and he said that it was Dolph Lundgren before Dolph Lundgren was Dolph Lundgren, basically. So this was my first time seeing Flash Gordon. I know it's a big kind of cult classic, and I don't know let's start with Melissa. What's your relationship with this movie? Had you seen it before? And just general thoughts. What did you think about it?
The first time I heard of Flash Gordon was the damn Queen song. You know, Flash. And oh, yeah. You know, like when you bring up Flash Gordon, half to most of the time, people are only going to remember the movie because of the theme song, or they're only going to know of the theme song and don't know that there's an actual movie attached to it, which was kind of the case for me when I was a little younger. I was like, oh, this is a cool Queen song. Oh, wait, there's a whole movie with this? Okay. But the movie, if you want to compare it to any form of like recent directors and stuff like that, it looks like something that could have been like thrown up by somebody like Tarzan Singh.
Yeah.
It's kind of wonderful cheesy goodness to like the umpteenth degree, and like I kind of feel like half the time I really don't have any idea what's going on, but it's like, oh, pretty colors, a lot of gold, and really interesting blonde-haired guy. Oh my god, what is going on? I know that there's a whole like it's based off comics, blah blah blah, all that good stuff, but yeah, it's okay. It's one of those movies where you go and you watch it with a group of friends and you make a drinking game out of it, and then it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Then you really enjoy it.
Yeah, whenever they say Flash,
you take a shot, blackout in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's like the equivalent of making making a drinking game out of Transformers the movie. Like every time they transform in or out, you have to take a drink.
Oh, man. Dead. Dead during the credits.
So, Tyler, what did you think about Flash Gordon? Had you seen this before?
No, I hadn't seen it before. I'd seen the Alex Ross cover for it, and I was like, oh, that looks, you know, it was one of those things that I saw maybe in like the like FYE, if those even exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And like I'd see it on the shelf and be like, oh wow, that looks pretty cool. And then I was like, oh, I might buy that on Amazon or something for cheaper. And then I instantly forgot about it as I walked away. I didn't know until I knew there was the Queen song, but I didn't connect the two because it's. The Queen song is just called Flash exclamation point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what.
Exclamation point.
Yeah, nice. I don't. If it was called Flash Gordon, I probably would have made the connection. But yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of things in it, and yeah, like you said, Melissa, it was like wonderfully cheesy, which is something I really dig in movies. Dino De Laurentiis produced this, and I am a huge proponent of all Dino De Laurentiis produced films. Conan the Destroyer,
yes.
Doom, any of the Schwarzenegger films that he, it's just the list goes on and on of my favorite De Laurentiis movies, and this is probably going to make its way up. I saw a lot of like Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a lot of Masters of the Universe. I saw a lot of and I mean, if you look at it and you look at like the serials that used to come out in like the 40s, 50s and 60s, like this is exactly what it was like, except it's just the look of it is up to date, I guess, in a way. I mean, like, yeah, like the cheesiness and the poor acting and the, you know, kind of quasi bad effects was all prominent here. It kind of reminded me of Sky Captain: The World of Tomorrow, where it was similar to that kind of tone, where it was like it was trying to be a movie or a serial from the 40s and 50s, you know, that kind of kind of sci-fi adventure thing. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. This was my first time seeing it, and I mean, I, just like you, Melissa, knew nothing about the movie itself and just heard the song when I was a kid and was like, wait, what? There is a real movie here? So finally kind of – I had been aware of the movie for a couple years but just never got around to seeing it. And now that I have, I don't really know how this movie got made. Like it's $35 million for this movie. It's like almost all of that went to the production design and the costume design. And it's like,
damn,
this
and
had
that
to be – This had to be like a costume designer's, you know, like dream come true, basically. I mean, everything in this is totally outrageous and just bold and brash and these crazy designs and colors and everything. And like you guys were saying, you know, it's got a little bit of that Eastern influence, kind of, yeah, like the Big Trouble in Little China type of thing. It really fits in with the whole mindset of 80s excess. I mean, I feel like this is a good way to kickstart that decade with everything just being so over the top and really, really big. So, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff to like in this movie if you are a fan of really cheesy, kind of campy stuff. If that stuff rubs you the wrong way, then you're going to hate Flash Gordon. So I think you just have to know kind of what you're getting
into.
Who
are those people?
Yeah, they need to be destroyed.
Yeah. If you can't have fun during this movie, probably.
I was gonna bring up you were mentioning earlier, Tyler, about De Laurentiis and mm-hmm. like all the amazing stuff that he's produced, and I looked up his profile. When you produce Halloween 3 and Dead Zone in the same year, you're automatically cool in my book. Oh my god, and Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
He goes from Maximum Overdrive to Red Sonja to Blue Velvet. I can't believe somebody could pull that off.
Yeah, he's such a
and all of the Evil Dead films and Jesus.
Wait, what was the one before Red Sonja? Oh, Maximum Overdrive, that was the one with the AC/DC soundtrack, wasn't it? Was that the one with the trucks and the machines that came along?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, the West of Us.
Have you ever seen the trailer for that thing? Where it's Stephen King all cross-eyed and he's like, I figured that this story was too good for me not to direct.
That was his first movie too, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, his first direct. His directorial debut.
Yeah,
that one was badass.
Cheesy Flash Gordon.
Right.
So, like, I don't know about you guys, but one of the parts that, I don't know if I'd call it one of my favorite parts, but one of the more ridiculous parts definitely is after, this is probably like, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes into the film, once Flash and his travel agent girlfriend get sucked into the vortex of Ming the Merciless, which, I mean,
they just met on that plane, dude.
Yeah,
that was the first time they met on that plane.
I know. But they're instantly, I mean, that's the kind of fiery chemistry between the two.
Right. Flash Gordon, man.
I was actually going to say, I hope that they didn't. I hope Abrams didn't get his inspiration for the beginning of Lost off of Flash Gordon. Maybe he did.
With the plane crash?
Yes.
Because there's two plane crashes over the course of like 5 minutes of this film. Like the first one, like the pilots in an actual plane suddenly get sucked out of the cockpit when hot hail falls through, and then.
Yeah.
Of course, Flash and the horribly named Dale, who's a woman in this movie.
Dale, get back in here, Dale.
They go up to the cockpit, and Flash clearly has taken pilot lessons before, so he knows what he's doing.
Because his Flash is on his T-shirt.
Yeah.
Plus that, and every Jets player has taken basic pilot lessons.
Of course.
Right.
Apparently.
But without the landing class. So that just piques our suspense all the more.
So they're sitting in the cockpit and the windshield is completely gone and wind is just blowing in their face, which I'm pretty sure there's something having to do with like depressurization and compression.
Because
things
of course they wouldn't be crushed. Of right. course they wouldn't fly out. How could
their
they?
Eyes should be out, but
so they... They crash land into Zarkov's, like, this insane scientist, greenhouse or something. And I think that the true hero of this movie is Zarkov's assistant, who just runs away when he's threatened with a gun and just avoids this entire craziness altogether. And somehow they get tricked into going into the spaceship, whatever. Long story short, they're launching through space. They crash land again onto the planet of Mongo. And then they're taken into this main, like, this main Great Hall type of scenario. Yeah. And after Flash is threatened to be killed, he gets this egg-looking device in his hand.
Kind of thing?
Right?
And it basically, just serves as a football, and he kind of utilizes his skills as the quarterback of the New York Jets to dispatch random enemies throughout the Great Hall. So I thought that was pretty
best phenomenal. Scene ever.
He's better at fighting with an object in his hands than he is without it, which I thought was pretty funny. It's like, oh, I'm completely useless, but oh wait, now I have an object like a football. Now I can just tackle 12 guys.
Oh man, maybe that's the deeper meaning messages of this film. That's what it's trying to get at.
Yeah, he's got like
there
a special
symbolism.
Plan.
Yeah, humanity is nothing without their careers and. Oh man.
Man, that is so deep. The weird part that I thought was like the circle jerk that the green soldiers had during the like initiation ceremony. Did any of us think that was really weird?
Yeah.
It was like, oh, God, I love the initiation ceremony. And these guys are just like, oh, yeah.
It seemed like they were just trying to stimulate this like whatever weird like
whatever.
What was it like Quato from Total Recall mixed with a scorpion in the middle of a tree stump thing?
Turn on the reactor. Yeah, there was just so much going on. And that's what I liked about this film, because this film could have been like five or six serials. Like every time they jumped to a new planet, it was like a new event. And Flash always is presumed dead. And clearly can't kill off the main character.
It kind of felt like we were going through like X-Men like comic arcs with Flash always being presumed dead, because that's what the X-Men are known for, always coming back to life among other things.
I kind of like Flash reminded me a little bit of I mean, because I've never read the Flash Gordon comics or anything. I mean, those were written back in what, like the 30s and 40s and stuff, so I have no who has time for that.
Who reads old comics?
Yeah.
Not me.
Flash kind of reminded me of Booster Gold a little bit, Tyler, which I know is a character that I know you're kind of a fan of. So maybe for people who don't know anything about Booster Gold, if you just want to
like
give like a
stupider booster.
Tyler, if you want to give like a 2-second, like a 2-sentence explanation of that character.
Yeah, I'll let Melissa explain him too, see if we have a different opinion of Booster Gold. Yeah, Booster Gold's from like the 25th century, and he was a football player back in the future, and he was caught cheating, and so he came back in time.
In the future?
Yeah, and he came back into the past with like superhero gear from the future and basically fights crime. But his main goal is to like be famous and make a lot of money as a superhero, so he's not really doing it for the greater good. He's more doing it for his greater good.
Yeah.
But you know, he has a robot sidekick, and he likes to jaw back and forth, and pretty humorous. Created by Dan Jurgens, personal friend and confidant.
Nice.
Boom.
Nice.
I met him once.
Didn't Tyler his robot sidekick? Isn't his name Skeets? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he skeets.
Right. Yeah. A T-shirt we were gonna do, and it just had the word awe and then a picture of Skeets three times underneath it.
You need to make that.
But yeah, I loved like how Flash, you know, wanders around for the first part of the movie with a T-shirt with his own name on it and stuff. That's the part that kind of reminded me a little bit of Booster Gold, you know, that kind of self-promotion aspect and stuff.
It kind of felt more like maybe it's better that he wears a shirt with his name on it in case he forgets his name.
Yeah, Flash is not the most intelligent. Flash.
I saw more He-Man from Masters of the Universe. You know, kind of like a pre-He-Man, like a prequel to Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
Jesus.
He's like just a blonde and just chiseled jaw and just going around fighting people. Mindlessly wrecking things.
So there was a couple cool things that I noticed in the beginning of this movie, like right during the opening credits, you know, the Queen song is playing and they've got these super fast cuts of all the comic panels going by. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Cause that, you know, this movie was made in 1980 and that's what the intros of, the intro of Marvel Studios, kind of logo, if you will, as before the Marvel movies comes up. That's what it looks like. It's just super fast, like as if you're flipping through a comic type of thing. I think they're probably directly influenced by the look of the editing there in Flash Gordon. And there's also that crazy editing sequence of Zarkov's memory being erased, where it's like super fast and everything is going backwards throughout his life until he's like an embryo or something. So those were like the more like stylized elements of the filmmaking that I noticed that I thought were kind of cool and you know, for the time, probably really interesting to look at. That kind of stuff happens all the time now, but you know, that whole 80s.
We're used to it. It's boring.
Yeah.
But it was pretty badass for the time, I think.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Like, and then, you know, that's just kind of one of the cooler aspects because it was clearly drawing from the original comics, like they're true to form, as opposed to drawing a serious tone like the serious secret origin of Flash Gordon. You know, he's just like, he jumps on a plane automatically in the action. No real origin story necessary, but yeah.
When you make a movie like Flash Gordon at that time and other movies preceding it include Batman the movie, that kind of serious kind of, you know, Tim Burton, Christopher Nolan tone hasn't even really like dominated the comic book movie scene yet. So, it was still acceptable to have that kind of cheesy goodness from like the earlier comics in there.
Yeah,
sure. That's what I like.
Yeah.
Also, back to the point where Zarkov and like his mind being erased. Remember the scene where they just kind of skipped over the part that he was, spoiler alert, he was faking it. Like he was faking his memory erasure.
Yes,
like he grabs Dale. Dale! And they kind of like walk through the hall and you think he's under the influence of whatever the Ming the Merciless.
Dr. Doom is.
Yeah, Dr. Doom. And then it flips over to a Flash Gordon scene and it flips back and they're escaping, like Zarkov and Dale. And he's like, I didn't forget all my memories. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's like, you can't.
Where's the realization?
Surprise!
Yeah, so other than that, everything was pretty streamlined, I say.
Yeah.
Pretty well absorbed. That was my one problem with it, I think.
The dialogue in this movie is so great. I mean, there's so many, like, one-liners and stuff, like, just tiny things that aren't really, you know, big moments, but that just made me laugh. At one point, Dale comes in and she's like, Flash, I love you, but we only have 14 hours to save the Earth. And it's just, you know, like, such arbitrary stuff like that. At one point, the seductress, the daughter of, what is her name, Princess Aura, I think, Ming's daughter, she is talking to, I think it's Dale, and says that my father always drinks a power potion before he makes love. I mean, there's just, like, there's a lot of little things like that. That just had more penetration.
Nice. Yeah, there was what was I gonna say?
Timothy Dalton and Houdini.
Timothy Dalton's character was pretty cool in this. later to be the fat Bond of the 80s.
Yeah, there's an interesting Bond connection here because Max von Sydow plays Ming the Merciless, and he played Blofeld in Never Say Never Again, which is probably, I mean, that's the kind of non-commissioned Bond film. But yeah. That was the one
where Sean Connery was having sex with Kim Basinger on a boat. But, like, you only see Sean Connery, like, writhing in agony while, like, there's a wall that Kim Basinger is behind.
There's agony involved in this?
Well, you know, like, you know, passionate agony, whatever you want to call it. And he's like, oh, yeah. And then, but you don't see Kim Basinger. So it's just like, it just looks like Bond is humping something behind a wall.
I don't remember it to that degree, but I'll have to check that out again.
Yeah, that one was a bad one. Never Say Never Again.
So question for both of you guys, which one did you think was more ridiculous, the lizard men or the hawk men?
Good question. Probably the lizard men, because they didn't do anything and they
because
just
their faces were kind of in their mouths or something weird.
They're kind of wonderful.
yeah
they just kind of pop out of nowhere every once in a while.
Wait, what'd you say, Melissa?
That should be my Halloween costume for next year.
That would be pretty great.
Pop into scenes from time to time. Like, all of a sudden, like, in the background will be a lizard guy. Mm-hmm. And they're just, like, looking at each other. Like, hey, yeah, we can't talk. But, yeah, I mean, the Hawkman looked, you know, very – and I'm sure DC jacked all this stuff for their own purposes. But, like, clear – Hawkman, Hawk Girl.
I was going to ask you about
that.
Based off
of
the Flash Gordon mythos, yeah.
Dude, which one came first? Do you guys know?
Is this
it was
like
probably
a
Flash
Chicken
Gordon.
Thing?
What?
She said, is it like a chicken and the egg thing? It does kind of, has that feel like those two designs of the Hawkmen from Flash Gordon and Hawkman, the actual DC Comics character, are so identical, pretty much. I mean, they wear almost the same headgear, and they have the huge wings, and it's all gold, and they've got the hammer and everything too. So it just, I don't know. It seems like to be a pretty big ripoff, one way or the other. I'm not sure which one came first.
I think it was Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it was definitely Flash Gordon because Hawkman didn't appear until the 1940s.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then like Adam Strange has to be a complete ripoff of Flash Gordon as well. Would you agree, Melissa?
Yeah.
Why not? I think they did try to like Flash Gordon may become less and less popular in the late 30s, and then DC was just like, oh yeah, I guess they're not writing about the Hawk people anymore. We might as well just steal that.
Well,
or maybe they bought out. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. If they bought him out, who owns Flash Gordon? Like, what publication?
I have no idea.
No.
Mm-hmm. I did hear that they're supposed to be doing another Flash Gordon movie, like now in 3D.
In 3D.
In 3D, yeah.
Got a serious tone, apparently.
A serious tone?
I don't know. I'm just saying that. It's gotta be true.
It'd be great if they try to do it all serious and stuff. I want like the Tim Burton Flash Gordon. See how incredibly like horrible.
Yeah, the costumes would be ridiculous enough for that. So did anybody else think it was just totally ludicrous that Flash's escape pod, first of all, after the whole like American Gladiators battle with him and Timothy Dalton on like the randomly rotating or gyrating platform that has spikes built into it for some reason, when he falls off of that and is hanging from the edge and somehow kicks himself into an escape pod when Ming is getting ready to atomize the planet or something, why is the escape pod in the most difficult spot to possibly get to, maybe in the entire ship or palace or wherever they are? And then secondly, why does Flash's escape pod equipped with a CB radio that apparently goes directly to the Hawkman's wrist amulets or something that allows them to communicate? I don't know. I thought that was one of the more ludicrous images in the whole movie for me. It was him like cruising on this like weird kind of like wind sail thing without the sail, and then talking
like
into
a sea doo.
Yeah, like a sea doo. Yeah, exactly.
Like a jet ski.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking for. A jet ski with a CB radio, just going through space, like breathing fine and everything, and just being like, yeah, all right. I don't know. That was
Flash.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. It's the same theory that applies to Dune, another De Laurentiis produced film, where like 8,000 years into the future, like radio microphones are still being used for communication. And it's a general, like every alien in the universe knows CB radio waves and utilizes them for thousands upon thousands of years.
Well, yeah, it struck me as even more strange because they had already established that telepathy is a normal thing on the planet Mongo. So it's like, what's the point of CB radios? Flash has already figured out how to communicate telepathically. Why doesn't he just do that for the rest of the movie? I don't know. Maybe he can only do it when he's being seduced by the daughter.
He can only do it when he's horny?
Yeah, it's like it's Swordfish, how Hugh Jackman has to like break the code to the CIA mainframe while he's, you know, having prostitutes all over him or something. But
that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. That absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they were saying telepathy was a thing that they do, and then strap on the helmet, and apparently Flash Gordon can do it as well, even though he can't really do it on Earth.
Right.
I don't know. That makes sense. But again, it doesn't matter. It's a 50s serial in 1980.
Yeah, I also I have to mention this. I'm sorry for just like mentioning random things without like
topics
of conversation. But they have guns in the very beginning of this movie when they like when the soldiers kind of bring them into that great hall. At one point, they shoot guns at Flash and everybody that shoot hands. I don't know if you guys noticed that they're just like the bullets are human hands.
That's how it is in the future. Yeah.
And also in the first 30 seconds of this movie, there's a voiceover between Ming the Merciless, who we have to say Max von Sydow was just ridiculously awesome in this movie as this villain, and the guy Dr. Doom, basically, who's his, you know, number two man. They're like it's this voiceover, and they're like looking through this you know, telescope or something down at Earth, and they're like, the inhabitants call it Earth, like all disgusted and kind of like it's a foreign concept for them, like they just did their research and found out what the inhabitants actually called it, and then they push a button that says earthquake like on their panel, like they clearly know
natural disasters and crap.
They clearly know what the word Earth is if it's in their own control panel of natural disasters. So I don't know, in the first 30 seconds this movie kind of sets you up for what kind of film it is and what kind of stuff.
Maybe they're just disgusted over the name Earth because they thought it wasn't as original as Mongo.
I guess that's very true.
I'm sorry, and every time it said Mongo, I was thinking of Mongo from Blazing Saddles, like eating like a huge spoonful of beans.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah, I thought of, I think Mongo was Chris Kattan's, one of Chris Kattan's characters in Saturday Night Live.
Mango.
Okay, that's right.
Yes. Okay. That stupid song, I can never disassociate it with his character ever again. Like, what is it called? I forgot the name of the song, but like every time I hear it, I think of like a little mango like popping out in the corner of my head, like doing a sexy dance.
Yeah.
Sounds awful.
Well, I mean, I think we covered a lot of what I wanted to get to. If you guys have anything else you want to bring up that we didn't get to, now's the time.
Flash. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, Queen. Like, I thought this whole movie would be like Queen songs, but it was just that one, and then like the really badass guitar riffs during the. Huh.
They even credit them as like one of like the main like.
Yeah.
You know. It's like, well, where is it all? But go on.
Yeah, there just wasn't as much as I thought there'd be. For a two-hour movie, I thought there'd be, like, I don't know, six or seven songs.
Yeah, totally. I had like, the same thought because, you know, they have the opening credits song, and then they don't come in again until, like, the really ridiculous, chaotic climax of, you know, the Hawkmen versus the soldiers on the ship,
so cool.
When it's just, it's utter chaos and just craziness, yeah. And lasers being shot everywhere, and you have no idea where anything is, or the geography of the scene is just thrown into a blender, basically.
And then they start rocking the wedding march, like, wow, 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 wow.
I was hoping that they put in the bicycle song in the middle of Flash.
I want to ride my escape pod.
They also referenced another Queen song when Voltan, or whatever his name was like, "Who wants to live forever?" I think that's a Queen song, so I don't know if they were just dropping that to be funny, or if maybe they wrote a song later called "Who Wants to Live Forever," but either way.
You know how they could have fit a Queen song in there? Another one? Like when Flash first, like, starts to use the telepathy helmet. Like, he could, and like, Princess Aurora, or Aura, or whatever the hell you call her, and, you know, she's trying to seduce him and crap. He could, like, start thinking of, I don't know, like, fat bottom girls or something like that.
Oh, man.
Or maybe some, "You're My Best Friend" when Dale and Flash reunite and they're running at each other.
You're my best friend.
Or better yet, when Flash and Timothy Dalton finally reconcile after the...
Yeah. There's just a montage of them, like, bonding, like, having a picnic all before the big battle.
In slow motion, they both reach into the tree stump and laugh.
Somebody needs to cut this together now.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, how stupid was that? Like, Timothy Dalton... Okay, yeah, let's go back to this, where they were sticking their hands in the tree stump, and he's like, "Oh, you a coward?" And Flash is like, "No way, man, whatever." And so Baron, or whatever, Timothy Dalton puts his hand in a hole, nothing happens. And then Flash puts his hand in a different hole. I was like, why don't you just stick it in the same hole, dude? Like, you can just follow him until he gets hit first and then be like, oops, you lost.
Like, no, I just crossing hands the point of the... in there.
Yeah. They both
Sorry,
reach in
had to say it.
Flash reaches in, and he's like, wait, is this what's going on? Is this what's supposed to happen in here? I don't know what's happening.
Wait, why is there a penis in here? Glory hole.
Oh, there's the line, and you crossed it, Tyler.
There it is. Well, come on, that first scene was pretty out. I mean, they were all just...
Yeah.
Jamming their poles or whatever they were doing. Did you see that? Did you watch Saturday Night Live last night?
No.
No. Okay. Damn it.
Jason Segel has a pretty masturbatory skit in there, so enjoy that.
Nice. All right. Cool. Yeah, I think that pretty much does it. So why don't we just go around the circle and just do some kind of concluding thoughts about the film. Melissa, we'll start with you.
I'm surprised that our conversation ended with the Jason Segel masturbation skits. But... Flash Gordon, once again, is cheesy goodness and is better watched with a group of friends. Go all Mystery Science Theater on it, make a drinking game out of it. It's a lot better when you do something like that. But if you're watching it by yourself too, you'll see, like, it's you don't have to take it seriously. I mean, well, you're not supposed to take it seriously, and if you are, then I don't understand it. So yeah, I liked it.
Nice. Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I support every Dino De Laurentiis produced film. Any film produced by a De Laurentiis is probably going to be in my book
Maximum
of suggestions.
Overdrive.
Yeah. So, and this one is especially just good as far as, not in its terribleness, but just in its outrageousness, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, like Melissa was saying, if you don't have a good time watching this movie, whether you really enjoy it, or whether you're making fun of it or whatever, you may God have mercy on your soul.
Yep. Yeah, I think any movie that makes reference to a pleasure moon is probably, you know, a good one. So
there's a castle built for only two. It's like, wow, that's gotta be small.
That's a really tiny castle. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you guys said. I think this movie's definitely worth watching if you've never seen it. If only for the ridiculous costume design and production design, you can just put it on mute and have it in the background just to kind of get a load of the fact that this movie got made in 1980. Oh, so
don't put it on mute, man.
Yeah. No. Do it a la, like, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Start, like, mouthing what they're saying. What you think they're saying.
Yeah, that's kind of what Tyler and I have talked about before. We wanted to do a some sort of show or podcast or video podcast or something where, like, we play one of those old, like, kung fu movies that are overdubbed and just put it on mute, and then we just create all the voices ourselves without ever having seen the film. So
nice.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Next on our list of things to do.
Yeah, do that.
All right, Tyler. Well, speaking of next on our list of things to do, why don't you rev the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
Excellent transition, Ben. Excellent. Let me just pull that lever that no one can see. All right. Next week for Thanksgiving week, happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners beforehand. We're going to try to check out Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, written by John Hughes, I believe.
Yep.
Directed by John Hughes?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Maybe. It's not on Instant Watch, but I'm sure it's going to be on TV. So just take a second to maybe flip through your DVR listings, like search shows.
Yep.
Or get it on DVD through Netflix, or maybe it might be on Hulu. Now.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on Blu-ray, so you can go pay for a Blu-ray and watch, like, the in high def deleted scenes of John Candy doing what he does. Probably eating. I'm just kidding, John. Oh, I love you, man.
That's,
you know,
awful.
And then he starts haunting you.
Oh, that would be a good haunt, I think. That would be kind of fun.
But as, like, Uncle Buck, I'm going to go and I'm going to drill you kind of haunt.
Take you to the back of his car. So happy Thanksgiving. We'll be watching that. It's a good one. It's a good one. Heartwarming. Trivia before you even watch it, the house that Steve Martin is trying to get to is the same house in Home Alone. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to get to Chicago.
Good stuff. All right. Well, you guys can shoot us an email. Let us know what you think of Flash Gordon or Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or any movie that we've talked about in the history of this long and awesome podcast at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe to this show for free in iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be awesome. Check us out on Facebook. We are on Twitter as well at twitter.com/NJNM podcast. We have one new follower this week we wanted to mention, at Captain Kukles. So thanks for the follow there. That's a pretty awesome name. All right, so let's wrap up the character name game. And the name was Teddy Roosevelt. So you guys have any idea what movie Teddy Roosevelt is from?
And I wonder, Ben.
Oh, okay.
Think.
Yeah. I can't imagine who... what movie this would be in. You want to take this one, Melissa, as the guest?
I guess so. It's The Muppets. No, I'm kidding. J. Edgar.
Oh, wrong. You're banned. You're in exile.
It's not actually J. Edgar, although I think Teddy Roosevelt... Oh, I don't know if Teddy Roosevelt was in that movie or not.
No, it's J. Edgar. Kennedy's.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, it's not that one either. So, Tyler, do you have a guess?
It's Night at the Museum, because Robin Williams played Teddy Roosevelt and he was in that penguin
movie. I thought this was in reference to movies that recently come out.
Well, that's the twist, is that, Tyler just said, Night at the Museum, because Robin Williams was in that movie and he also voices the penguin in Happy Feet 2, which came out in theaters this week. So, yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Right. Night at the Museum, never seen it.
Oh, all right.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, I thought for sure we were on the same page, because that's like, the of all the Teddy Roosevelt representations in film, that's the one I thought of first, which seems a little weird, but he was really good as Teddy Roosevelt, I thought. But.
Nice. All right, Melissa, well, you'll know for next time how it works, then, because we definitely want to have you back. So let's go around the circle and just tell people where they can track down more of our work on the internet this week. So Melissa Molina, we'll start with you.
All right. Let's see. I just published my video interviews of the Muppet premiere on about.com Hollywood Movies, and I also write for AMC Theaters and Latino Review. I'll be having some Muppet stuff, interview with Steve McQueen for Shame on there, and then Shakya.com. I'm actually going to be putting up an interview with Derek Mears I had last night, where I got him to talk about Community since he is Kick Puncher.
Nice. Good stuff. All right, Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'm just as busy as Melissa. I got that the Twitter feed I'm in control of, and that's about it. All right. I'm doing right now.
Good stuff. Well, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. You can read my work occasionally at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, my reviews at notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast, obviously. And you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast as well. Music for this episode comes courtesy, of course, of the Flash Gordon soundtrack.
Flash.
I would open it and close it with nothing,
he's a miracle.
Nothing less than Queen here. So we will, as Tyler mentioned, be watching Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for next week. So check that out. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you think of the show. And special thanks to Melissa for donating your time and coming by and hanging out with us.
And I promise I won't screw up on the next character name game.
It's all good.
It is a very intricate game to play, much like chess. You have to be like three or four moves ahead of your opponent.
And I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
Well,
I never get
tuned.
Those.
Stay tuned, everyone, to see if that happens sometime in the future. So, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see y'all next week.